Hello, and welcome to Python 411, computer programming for everybody. Pragmatic Python. Yes, Python is pragmatic. It is practical, and that is its chief characteristic sometimes, it seems to me. If only Python were able to create time, create more time, then I could spend more time enjoying it. And time is what we all have too little of these days. Well, it turns out, believe it or not, that I'm spending more time on Python than ever, especially on my own Python programming. And that is a real joy. Doing these Python 411 podcasts is a completely different activity, which is joyful itself, but a different activity which requires a lot of time. And I'm needing to spend more time on this, which I will in the coming week. In addition to doing my own programming and spending a lot more time on that recently, I've also been playing the Python Challenge. And the Python Challenge, if you haven't tried it yet, you must. I'll give you the website, the URL, in my show notes. The Python Challenge is an intellectual challenge, a puzzle on the web. And it's a new kind of puzzle, a new kind of challenge to help you learn Python, but also to help you enjoy Python in an intellectually challenging way, much more so than doing a crossword puzzle or a, what's this new thing they call it with numbers from Japan, Sudoku or something like that. Nope, this is the Python Challenge, and I saw it. It had so much publicity several months ago, and I was so busy I didn't try it. And, boy, it's just as good now as it was as if you had started then, and I got to say it's far better than I ever anticipated, and I'm learning so much. So, again, it's one of those things I strongly recommend you try, the Python Challenge. Well, Python is pragmatic, and it's also mature enough that there's just so many good things out there that I can never find time to look into them all. Recently, I had a conversation with an accomplished Pythonista who shall remain unnamed, and he clued me into one aspect of Python that I just haven't paid enough attention to, and I must get around to, and that is some of the more interesting aspects of the Python standard library. You know, Python comes with batteries included, which primarily means the standard library. So while I've mentioned many modules beyond the standard library that I've found so fun and useful for my own use and also for extending in my own programs and scripts, there's so much left in the standard library that I really haven't picked up on. For instance, one of the main things that was brought to my attention was that something as seemingly innocuous as the pickle module, the Python pickle module, has intricacies and capabilities that are interesting and incredibly useful. The pickle library is for serializing data objects, and I don't have time to go into it now. I'll do an entire podcast on the pickle module once I've deciphered more of its inner meanings, but I think I've had a great deal of fun just playing around with it, and that's something that anyone who knows the core Python language can do. They can pick one of the Python standard library modules, such as pickle, and I recommend pickle for those of you who have any sort of an interest in its core area of attack, then try it out. And we'll talk about that more as these future podcasts roll out. And there's lots of other standard library modules that are, I'm sure, very interesting that I haven't gotten around to yet. Okay, another one of the things that I've really gotten into recently is I'm trying out the Komodo IDE. And you know, there are so many free IDEs that are really good for Python, and they've been perfectly adequate for my purposes. In fact, to be honest with you, I mainly just use a text editor throughout most of my 5 years of Python hobbydom. I've used various text editors, but right now, because I use the Macintosh, I tend to just use some program that comes with it called, I believe, TextEdit. Which is, it's a very simple text editor, and that's fine. Python is simple enough that works just fine. I did play around with, I think I actually downloaded a sample copy of Komodo, you know, again, 5 years ago. But at that time, I was using Linux, and I think it worked fine on Linux. But when I switched to the Macintosh, I got away from it. But I noticed that there was a new edition of Komodo out, which supports Mac OS X. So I decided to try it out, and I'm really impressed, I got to tell you. It's not free. It costs $35 for a personal copy, and more for a business copy that you can use for making lots of bucks. But I got to say that the $35 is well worth it, and I'm going to go forward. I mean, they have a trial version, but I'm going to invest in the real thing because it makes programming with Python a real, even more of a joy, if you can believe it. And I'm sure that the more complex and larger your program is, the more useful you will find an IDE such as this. And I, even for my simple projects, I'm beginning to find that this can be a great advantage. I had read a review recently where Komodo and Wing IDE came out as two of the best. So I really guess I owe it to myself to try out Wing IDE also, because it's also another one that costs $39 for a personal copy. And I've just read such glowing reviews from people who use it that I think I'm going to have to try both Komodo and Wing IDE and get back to you with an analysis of that in a future podcast. And, you know, there's other things like Eric and Stan's editor and SPE, many other free IDEs, including PyDev, which is a plugin for Eclipse. And I think that having all of these choices of technology to use is definitely a good thing. But even if there were only Komodo, I would have to say that it is a tremendous value. And if you do find yourself thinking of an IDE beyond the free ones and you're willing to invest $35, get on over to Active State and try it. And by the way, they're not paying me for this, I guarantee you. I hate not to mention Wing IDE in the same breath, because the people who are using it on the web, reviewing it on the web, are saying just as good of things about Wing IDE. So I'm definitely going to try that out and get back to you, because both of them seem to be Komodo from my personal experience now, and, although very brief, and Wing IDE from others' experiences seem to be wonderful tools for managing your Python projects and doing work where you get full code colorization and debugging and look up to find out what the documentation says in a very simple format while you're in code completion, you know, the type ahead. These things that you would normally find in full-strength industrial IDEs, which shall remain unnamed. Well, again, I have been spending a lot of time programming instead of podcasting, and in an upcoming series, I hope to really go into some detail. I think that my simple scripts that I do will be of great interest to the newcomers to the Python language who I can walk through some of the ways I figured out how to do things that were easy but not trivial for me to figure out. And I think these will be educational, and I will make the code clean and pretty and post it on my website. And I really hope to complete this by January 1st. And that's an ambitious goal at this point, because I keep adding functionality to my scripts. And these are all web scripts. They're CGI scripts that do various things. And I am looking forward very much to doing that, and I'm putting a lot of effort into that. So be patient and bear with me. That's coming. I just mentioned IDE comparison, which I will be doing. And I've mentioned before that I want to do interviews of prominent Pythonistas and hackers. And I finally have gone out and bought some equipment. I just did it yesterday, some additional equipment for recording phone conversations in high-quality audio format. Now, I still have to learn how to use that equipment, and I want to do these interviews well. I don't want to just jump in and do them willy-nilly. So again, I require some patience, but certainly as the next year unfolds, we'll start seeing some interviews, which I believe will be good. I'm beginning to think of perhaps taking a vacation from my day job for a 4-day weekend to go to the Python Developers Conference. I believe it's in Austin, Texas in late February, and I've never gone to one of these before, but I'm very seriously debating and doing a sales job with my wife. So we'll see. I'll keep you posted on how that goes, but that would be wonderful. I could go there and report on some of those activities and maybe do some interviews with people while I'm there. So all of these things are in the planning, shall we say, and will be coming up soon in this podcast series. Now, another thing I like to do just to pass the time is to follow the blogs of Pythonistas and the news group and all the news on the web about Python and similar technical topics, other languages that are similar, and the debates that go on back and forth between hackers of the various communities. And I got to admit, I find it interesting. And I also think that I gained some insight by seeing the blog comments of some of the really core Python people to see what the thinking is in the creation and, more importantly, the future evolution of Python. And I believe that it's just profoundly interesting. As I did a whole podcast on the evolution of Python, and while it continues to go forward, and I feel that Python has very strong philosophical foundations and extremely intelligent decision-making for the future. And these are, developing a language, it turns out, is complex, and there are many trade-offs. And when you look at comparing different languages, I think I'm going to do another podcast in the near future where I compare different programming languages, strengths and weaknesses. Even though I've done it before, I've had a lot of new thoughts, I hope, insights on those subjects, and I'm definitely planning one on that. In fact, I'm redoing a script online, and it's not up yet, but to compare certainly all of the dynamic languages, which I really think there are five major ones: Python, Perl, the original one, and PHP, which is more for strictly almost single purpose for doing server-side websites, but very important in that role. You notice that the bulletin board or the message board on my system is coded in PHP. I didn't code it, of course. I just use it. But that same PHP code message board system is used by almost everyone for their message boards other than the blog message boards. And that's because PHP is very good at what it does. So, again, I think all languages have their own niche. And Ruby is coming on strong now, as we've mentioned, which is very similar to Python. And JavaScript is very important for client-side programming. I use it myself all the time. And especially as Ruby is so similar to Python and is newer, and is gaining some popularity because of Ruby on Rails web framework, it's interesting to see some of the authoritative Python aficionados commenting on it, and I really enjoy reading their comments. There was a new posting by Bruce Eccles, which maybe I'll link to in my web notes, where he really looks at the solid underpinnings of the Python decision-making. I believe that Python's general purpose nature, and I think it's being evolved very effectively to remain and to grow as an even more general purpose and valuable language, which will be able to do big projects as well as small projects. And decisions are being made for the long term, not just the short term. And I think that is important. One of the things that has been pointed out on the Python news group as perhaps a problem is that there are so many different Python solutions for many problems, such as web frameworks. We have more than a dozen Python web frameworks, including three or four really new ones that are very powerful, like TurboGears and Django and Subway. And I even see in the news group that there's now some discussion that maybe Subway and TurboGears may actually combine forces and merge, which I think would be great. But it's only when you have such wonderful code bases that you can consider such things. Subway itself, it has a lot of buzz and is no doubt a wonderful program. TurboGears more recently has developed perhaps even more buzz, but they're similar. I think they both use the Cherry Pie toolkit, and so it'll be interesting to see how that develops. But I think that you can learn a lot by following that, and I think that what comes out most to me and means the most to me is that Python is a pragmatic programming language, practical and pragmatic. It has good theoretical underpinnings, but the developers led by Guido von Rossum are very pragmatic. And I use that word, there's an inside joke there for some of you, perhaps, some of you fellow geeks. There is a probably the first English language book about Ruby that came out was what is called the Pickaxe book. But it was written by two gentlemen who were known as the Pragmatic Programmers because they had previously written a famous book called The Pragmatic Programmer. And I like that book. I bought it years ago in its first edition, and I think it helped me learn Python even better to look at a very similar language to Python that was somewhat different, though, and it helped me learn things from a different way. And the new version of it that's out, I guess the second edition, I've been reading in the bookstore. Just with a few hours reading in the bookstore, I think that I can appreciate, because Python is pragmatic, and because I believe that there's room for more than one programming language in the world, I'm not above reading the Pickaxe book. And I think that by doing so, I am learning better how to understand some of the more advanced features of Python. The iterators and generators and decorators, you know, that some of these developments in Python are even in reaction to or response to the development of the newer Ruby language. And I believe that it's wonderful that these features are coming into Python. I believe that, you know, Ruby has nothing to attract me from Python because Python fits my brain and because it is better, more of a general purpose language. But you can learn from the fact that they came out with new features, which I'm glad are being added to the Python language. So if you get a few hours and you read the first two or three chapters of the Pickaxe book, there's a picture of a pickaxe on the front. I guess it's an O'Reilly book. But if you've been struggling a little bit with generators and iterators, then, you know, Ruby uses the same language, the same terminology oftentimes as Python does for these newer features, and it's useful to pick up on that. So we're not afraid in the Python community to think about other languages and learn about them also, because we don't live in a xenophobic little island. We believe that Python is going to become the central programming language in a very multi-programming language world. And I really believe that in the year 2006, one of the most significant developments for Python by far will be the formal version 1.0 introduction of IronPython by Microsoft. Now, many of us in the Python community like to use open source tools such as Python, and we like to use Linux or even the Mac operating system. But you know what? Microsoft is very big and has 95% of the desktop operating systems. And for Python to be the first dynamic language to be fully developed in the .NET framework, I think that this is a huge thing. And I think that by hiring Jim Hagunin, who originated Jython and then originated IronPython, the .NET implementation of Python, and by integrating him into the .NET developer community, Microsoft is going to release Python, IronPython, as a .NET framework language sometime in 2006 officially. Now, you can use it right now if you're a Microsoft person. And I think that they're also going to make it work with Visual Studio. You know, it's always in any technology. And I, by the way, I happen to be in a technical industry, just not the computer, not exactly the software industry, but I work in a very technical industry. I'm a technical person. And I can tell you that technology always develops two steps forward and one step back. Two steps forward and one step back. And certainly programming languages are the same way. And, you know, Python, yes, we have a plethora of tools for doing the same thing. But I think that experimentation is good as long as it's brought back together to the center eventually. Well, one of the things that has happened in the last week that could be construed as one step back is ActiveState, which is a very strong supporter of dynamic languages, including Perl and Python and Ruby and Tickle. And I believe that they discontinued something called Visual Perl and Visual Python, which were implementations of, so that you could use Python and Perl in the Visual Studio, the Microsoft Uber IDE. Well, they just didn't have a big enough market to continue this. But you know what? They're the same people who published Komodo, which I began this podcast, or almost began it earlier, by telling you how great the Komodo IDE is, and it really is. And now they'll put all their resources into that. But also I believe that for those who want to use Python with Visual Studio, I believe that Microsoft, and I know they've already released, I've seen it on the web, they've released some functionality of Python in Visual Studio. And that's something that even Perl doesn't have, or certainly Ruby or any other scripting language, only Python. And by the way, I don't shy away from the word scripting language either. Some people think that's a term which downgrades a language or makes it seem simpler, because scripting we think of as doing simple tasks. Well, I think Python can be very excellent at doing simple tasks. And I do believe that of all the dynamic interpreted languages, which are sometimes called scripting languages, I believe that of all of them, Python is the most powerful for big projects and is going to evolve is better suited to evolve into a general purpose, very high-level language for doing large projects, which it already is. So, but I don't shy away from the word scripting language either. So there you have a lot of my thoughts on the philosophy of Python and the current news in the Python community. So in talking about how languages evolve and the importance of Python's Benevolent Dictator for Life, Guido von Rossum, and the other core developers, of their integrity and steadfastness and judgment. I can't stress that enough because, again, as I say, I'm in a technical industry, have been for 30 years, and I know that technology is messy. It's two steps forward, one step back. But it's important to do two things and keep them in balance. The leaders of a the leading developers of a technology must have the strength of their convictions. They must have faith in the strategic decisions and directions which they have embarked upon. And they can't abandon those strategic decisions with every wind of change that blows through town, which there always are, because as technology develops, people who start something new to do the same thing that you've been working on for a long time can always implement a few things that are better because they're more well-known than they were when you started your project. And it's important that you not be swayed, but yet you have to keep in balance the other side. The other side is, secondly, you must be able to adapt and use those newer principles, learn from your competitors, so to speak. And that's exactly what the Python team is doing. They have strength in their convictions. They know why they made certain strategic choices. But yet they are not above being pragmatic and humble enough to learn. So they have learned from Ruby. They have learned some things which they have implemented in recent new versions of Python, which advance the Python language and give it more modern, powerful features that in some areas than what it had before. But it still has the strong foundation, which I believe is stronger than any other, and the 10 years of development strength, which has given us all the mature Python libraries. So, again, another way of looking at technologies is there's always a trade-off between the hot new technology and the older, mature technology. The hot new technology will have certain advantages, but it has huge disadvantages because it doesn't have the maturity and the length of development of the older, more mature technology. And I believe Python, we know that it has the maturity and the incredible infrastructure, the edifice of code which has been built around and underneath it, which new languages can't have right away. But we also see that it can adapt and use the better features of newer languages. And I believe that by doing this, Python is able to sort of, bear with me here, implement in practice, in evolving a technology, sort of the spirit of a Dylan song from the around 1970, which was his song Forever Young. So Python can have wisdom and maturity and yet stay forever young. Well, that's pretty philosophical. So I think at that point, I'm going to just wrap up. And believe me, as the holiday season rolls through here, I'm going to be trying to work harder than ever on my scripts and coming back to you with podcasts. I think the future will hold more excitement. And there is one other last tool I want to mention. This is a small tool, an independent project, but I just want to mention it. Okay, this is something called Bruce, the presentation tool. So Bruce, Bruce. I'll put the URL to it in my notes. It's bruce.python/hosting.com. But I'll put it there. And it's a tool. It's based on Pygame, which is very useful in and of itself. If you're interested in programming games, this Pygame module, and I guess I'll put a link to that too, the Pygame module allows you to get up and running very, very quickly, quicker than I think I can imagine any other game programming tool would allow. So Pygame it's not something I've used a lot, but if you're interested in writing games with Python, including some GWiz graphics, well, then Pygame is the way to do it. Well, Bruce uses this Pygame module to make it easy to control and direct and manipulate your presentation tools for doing presentations of text, code, or images, and even presentations of interactive Python sessions. So you can see how this might be useful in the Python community and totally non-Python related things. So I'm going to put a link to that. It's just another one of these wonderful tools coming from the Python community that I think are worth your time and looking into. So, okay, I'll put links to all of this, and I appreciate the audience very much. I continue to get very useful feedback, and I can't take the time to acknowledge every single person who has sent a useful email or some of the people I've talked to on Skype or on the phone. I appreciate all of your comments and your feedback. I'm trying to use them. Time is always the problem. I have a full-time day job with involves much travel, and I have a large family, as I've mentioned. But I'll keep coming back with Python 411 series. Please enjoy yourself. And I might just mention we continue to get enough votes over at Podcast Alley to be the leading programming language podcast series. I appreciate that. And I do have another podcast series that's not programming or Python related, just called the Aware Tech series. You can see it on my website at www.awaretech.com. I am going to be posting in the next few days a top 10 predictions for 2006, both for technology and politics and the economy. So, hey, might be of interest to some people. So for now, I'm going to sign off, but please keep enjoying Python, and we'll be talking to you again very, very soon.